to deal with verses 15 to 22. This is in all of each of the synoptics, like a lot of these have been. So this is recorded in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. With Mark, it's in chapter 12. With Luke, it's in 20. You don't need to go to those now. And we're not even really going to refer to them today because this is one of the few times that they all match up pretty well. So there's nothing that we have to go grab here and grab here to make it more full or more well-rounded, all right? Matthew 22. Let's read our text. Then the Pharisees went and they plotted how to entangle Jesus in his words. Surprise. They sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true, and you teach the way of God truthfully, and you do not care about anyone's opinion, for you're not swayed by appearances. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" And Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why would you put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. I'm an American, I can say it, denarius, I guess. And Jesus said to them, "Whose likeness and whose inscription is on this?" And they said, "Caesar's." And then he said to them, "Therefore render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And when they heard it, they marveled, and they left, and they went away. I hate taxes. I'm sure that I'm not the only one in this room that hates taxes. I hate being taxed for the majority of the things that they use my taxes for. I especially hate being double taxed and triple taxed. I hate being double dipped on, which is like something that's constantly happening more and more often, it seems like, in my life. Me and my wife have been small business owners for 25 years, and you want to talk about getting handled and abused, especially in this state. When you have a small business, they might as well just come out and say, "We don't want any of you to have a small business," because that's what they're doing. It's amazing to me every year how hard I know we go out and we work with our hands and we've done the footwork to grow the business and sustain the business and watch what it grosses just to watch what I get to keep. And it makes me upset. And I'm sure that you guys, some of you understand too. You don't have to just own a small business to know that sometimes it just straight up seems unfair what they take from us. When me and my wife were brand new Christians and I got into the business, I didn't have anybody to train me in this industry. The guy that sold it to me kind of dipped on me and I was kind of left out there to fend for myself. And so there just happened to be another guy in the church that we were in, apart from the guy that sold it to us, that was in the same industry, that put his arm around me and said, I'm going to help you do this. And he showed me the ropes. And he was a single guy. I think he was widowed with two kids, older though. And so one of the things that my wife used to do was invite him over often after the days of work when me and him would be out working hard all day, and he'd come home and she'd make him a good meal. He loved it. He loved Carrie's cooking. And we'd sit around that table. And so not only was he this guy that was helping me in life and in this industry that I was in, he was also an older Christian than us that we were looking to hear about the goodness of God and what life looks like as a Christian. And this man would sit there night after night at this dinner table telling us how he has not ever paid a penny to taxes. He would proceed over and over again to tell us all the loopholes and all the ways that we can get around it. And I remember as a young Christian thinking, like, this is rad. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know that Christians, like, could be so rebellious towards the governing authorities and the money that they think is theirs. Like, this is cool. Right? His name was Bob. I love Bob. That's what Bob said about Christians and taxes. We get to look today at what Jesus says about Christians and taxes. Verse 15, of course, it starts the Pharisees up to their same old games, doing what they always do. They went and plotted how to entangle Jesus in his words. And it's like, why? You know what I mean? And I feel like we know at this point. We're in chapter 22 of Matthew. We've come so far through this that I think we know why. But the bottom line is that Jesus was straight up on multiple levels dangerous to them and everything that they were trying to profit on as religious leaders. He just baffled them. And he caused people to question. And as he caused people to question with his truth-telling, the crowds got bigger. And this bothered these guys. And there just came a point where the goal was, we need to put this dude away for good. And that's where the Pharisees were at. We need to catch him in an error that can lead to an arrest and a conviction. No matter how we do it. Play dirty, play clean, doesn't matter. And of course, here we know they're playing dirty on this, right? We need to get this guy off the streets. We need to get him off our backs. We need to get him out of our lives. It's all that matters at this point, right? Verse 16. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true and you teach the way of God truthfully and you do not care about anyone's opinion, for you are not swayed by appearances." So the Pharisees send some of their followers, their other Pharisees, in the making, their little cronies, like little mini-me's, you know what I mean, becoming really good legalists. And they send a group of them along with the Herodians. Now, the question might be, who were the Herodians? The Herodians were a group of politicians who were pro-Herod, thus the name Herodians. Like, they were supportive of Herod's power and Herod's dynasty. And because they were pro-Herod, they were also, this may sound weird, pro-Rome. They were pro-Rome as well. They were pro-Caesar. Because the Jewish rule received benefits by helping Caesar's rule over the Jewish people. They were kind of in bed together. They kind of scratched each other's backs as far as profit goes and power goes. So these guys were a political party that were pro-Rome, and they were pro-Caesar. And so because they were pro-Herod and they were pro-Rome, but the weird thing is, like, the Pharisees, the Jewish religious leaders, like, were not fans of these guys at all. That's the weird part about this, is these guys weren't people that went out and had a beer together. Right? They were people that were in complete disagreement with each other. They were opposite of each other. So the question becomes, why in the world would the Pharisees bring the Herodians along on this one when they technically hated each other? That's what you have here. The answer is to catch Jesus in an error. Right? There's a lot of people that disagree with each other or at odds with each other until they have a common goal. And then they crawl into bed with each other. We see this throughout history in many ways, in many places, at various times, where you've got two opposing parties that can't stand each other until there's a common interest. And they know that they're going to be able to help each other with that common interest. That's exactly what we see going on here. And so this 1-2 punch is what's being hoped for here with the Pharisees along with the Herodians to guarantee victory in catching Jesus in error that will put him away once and for all. And we're going to come back to this, of course. And so in verse 16, we have the lead-in, we have the setup to the question of entrapment, which is pure flattery. These guys are just, it's just flattery, and not the good kind. I don't know if there is a good kind. Yeah, maybe. This ain't a good kind. So they're buttering Jesus up, right? They're prepping him before they thrust the sword. And so they say, teacher, we know that you're true and that you teach the way of God truthfully and you don't care about anyone's opinion. You're not swayed by appearances. And so this is like complete like fakery. Like these guys are a bunch of cowards. They're a bunch of sissies, right? And yet, even in their dishonesty, they're 100% accurate about what they say about Jesus. They're like completely accurate about him, that Jesus is the opposite of them in every single way. When it comes to integrity and courage and truth, right? Righteousness. And so they butter him up and then they say, verse 17, tell us, what do you think? And here comes the question, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar? Yes or no? That's basically all they're looking for with this question. It only requires a yes or no answer. So they think this question's airtight because they believe that Jesus only has two options, with the response, right? Yes or no. And here's the deal of it, of course. If he says yes, he's in trouble with the Pharisees for giving his allegiance and his approval to a wicked, tyrannical, godless, pagan entity and power, right? If he says no, then he's in trouble with the Herodian politicians, right? For the promotion of tax evasion, basically, is what we're talking about. Both being grounds in different ways with the different groups for arrest and conviction, legally. Legally, I want you to notice, too, is it lawful? I want you to notice the word lawful is so important, right? We're talking about two different laws here that he might break. But nevertheless, because they're laws, whether it's the Jewish law or whether it's the Rome, the law of Rome, it could lead to conviction. This is they're trying to legally catch him here on either side. It's a trap, right? It's the dude in Star Wars, you know? We're getting pulled in with a tractor beam, and he's like, it's a trap, you know? That's what this is, and these guys are trying to do, they're always doing this over and over and over again. So what does Jesus do? How in the world is Jesus ever going to get out of this one? You know what I mean? They're always just driving him into a corner, and they forget that he can move through walls, you know? And he kind of does it here. So verse 18, Jesus, aware of their malice, said, why put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax. And there's one thing that these guys should have learned by now, and it's that Jesus is not stupid, okay? He never has been. He's not stupid. And not only should they know that he's not stupid, but that whenever they try to make him look stupid, he's just going to turn around and end up making them look stupid. But they're too stupid to have learned this. You know what I'm saying? Like just over and over and over again, these guys just get humiliated. And of course, Jesus knows this, right? Like he knows how to deal with people like this. And so he begins his response by letting them know right away, like, I'm on to you. You know, I'm on to you. I know what you're doing. I see what you're doing. I understand exactly what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And because of your motive, your maliciousness towards me, once again, you're only showing your true self, your hypocrisy. He calls them hypocrites, which is an open insult. And if you ever go to a place like John 8, or, I mean, there's places where Jesus lets the Pharisees have it. And those whole discourses are filled with him addressing them as hypocrites, which basically means someone who appears to be something that they are not. It's someone who appears to be something that they are not. They appear to be the righteous ones. They appear to be the godly ones. They appear to be the true ones. And here they are trying to put to death the one who is actually all those things. They're none of it. Verse 19. Jesus says to him, whose likeness and inscription is on this? Is that 19? What am I doing? Oh, show me the coin. That's kind of important, right? Like, we need this part. Like, show me the coin for the tax, and they brought him a denarius, right? Is that where we are? Yeah. All right, good. I'm struggling today, guys. I don't know what to tell you. Hang with me, right? So Jesus, even though he's like, you're a bunch of malicious, like, hypocrites, he's like, I'll bite, you know? Like, I'll play along. Go ahead and hand me your coin. Right? And if you remember from previous sermons, a denarius would have been basically like a day's wage. Like if you were a common worker, if you were in agriculture or whatever, which a lot of them were at the time, or even if you were on a fishing boat, like some of the disciples were, like, that's basically what you would get for a day's worth of hard labor, was a denarius. And so Jesus asked for it. They hand him one. He takes the coin, he inspects it, and then he shoots back with a question of his own. Right? Which, it's so funny. It's so funny to me how he's always able to flip the script on these guys. He goes from the one being interrogated to the one interrogating now, which is just so funny. Like the Pharisees so often had to be like, wait a minute, we're asking the questions here. You know what I mean? And Jesus is like, no, I have better ones. You know, I have better questions than yours. And so here comes Jesus with his question after receiving the coin. That's found in verse 20. Jesus says to them, whose likeness and inscription is on this? So Jesus asks his question, whose likeness and inscription is on this? Whose face is on this coin? That's his question. Image. Image. Whose image is on this coin? And 21, they said Caesar's. And so he says to them, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. So they say Caesar. So Jesus responds like, okay, then since it's his image on the coin, give it to him. Like it's his, right? And I feel like that's not really the answer that I wanted or maybe that you want. We might think that Jesus would say something like, he's not God. I am, right? He's not the ruling, reigning authority. I am. He's a corrupt imposter, and I'm the real power. But he doesn't. He says, give it to him. Give it to him. Which pleased and relieved the Herodians, because that's all they needed to hear. That's all they needed to hear. Like, cool, he's not a rebel. He's not a revolutionary, right? Good deal. That's all I needed to hear. But the Pharisees were probably thinking at this point, like, we have him. Until he fills in the second part of his statement, right? So we have give to Caesar what's Caesar's, and then he adds, give to God what is God's. And it is in this full answer that Jesus escapes. He gets out of the corner they put him in. Because he appeases both parties without breaking any laws, whether Jewish or Roman. We good? Now, let's talk about the coin for a second. The image, the face on the coin would be of a Caesar. Caesar's not just a man's name. I'm sure that you guys all know this. This is probably very elementary to you, but we're going to go through it anyway. Caesar is not just a man's name, though it originated there. It's a title, okay? It's the title of any and all Roman emperors after the succession of Augustus Caesar. Caesar then became synonymous as a title with emperor. Emperor synonymous with Lord. That's really what it means, Lord. People would hear the name Caesar, the title Caesar, and they would think Lord, Lord. Okay? It's a sovereign power of rule, one that people actually worshipped. They would worship the Caesar. And at that time, the image on that coin would have been Tiberius Caesar. He would have been the ruling Caesar at the time of Jesus. So the first point of concern to the religious Jew would be that the paying of this tax is a form of endorsement to that Lord, right? To even a form of worship. By giving that guy that coin. Because you do not have the image of the sovereign Lord of the universe on a coin. That's not what Jesus is. He's not looking at a picture of him, right? He's looking at a picture of another guy, so, which is counterfeit, which is false, right? You're looking at a man. As a result of the image on the coin being of the Roman Lord, Caesar, the inscription would have been just as bad. The inscription on the coin. It would read, Tiberius Caesar, son of the divine Augustus, right? So you have Lord Augustus and then the son of that Lord, right? And this is what Jesus, God the Son of God, is looking at when he makes this statement. In other words, if anyone really should be offended and have a problem with this coin, it shouldn't be the Pharisees. It should be Jesus. And yet Jesus looks at it and he's like, yeah, it's his. Give it to him. It's his. Give it to him. Weird stuff. Jesus acknowledges the image and the inscription and he says, yeah, it's his. Give it to him. And having said all that, here's the bottom line, guys, concerning what Jesus is really getting across to these guys with his answer. Give to Caesar what's Caesar's, give to God what's God's. He's saying, since the Caesar fashioned this in his own image for him, give it to him. But since God fashioned you in his image for him, give it to him. This is what's being said in this statement by Jesus, ultimately. They would have thought immediately when they hear image and image talk back to the Pentateuch, the first five books of Moses, the image of God. Right out of the gates, right? Genesis 1, 26, God, let us make man in our image, right? That's what we are, every single one of us. We are coins stamped with the image of God for God, the one who stamped us. And he's trying to make sure that the Jewish leaders don't forget this, because they have. They've completely forgotten it, right? So Jesus is like, don't worry about your piece of silver. And where your silver goes, like, worry about what you do with you. Worry about what you do with you. That'll preach. The Pharisees cannot argue with this. They cannot find fault with this statement because it's true, right? And not only is it true, it's legal. It's law. It's first five books of Moses, right? They're not going to argue with that. And so even though this is an excellent appeasement by Jesus to the legal Pharisaical concern, it's also straight up a rebuke. It's a rebuke to them. Because though they thought that they were extremely dedicated to God, that they were actually the furthest from him in so many ways, guys, in so many ways, on so many levels, Jesus is saying, God wants you. God wants you. Worry about that. Be concerned with that. It's a statement directly, targeted at their ongoing hypocrisy. Right, of thinking that there's something that they're not. Verse 22, then we have, when they heard it, they marveled, and they left him and went away. So no bueno. It all blew up on them. Didn't work again. Mission failed. Tails tucked, right? Foiled again. Yet, once again, amazed. Amazed, because they could not have predicted him getting out of it the way that he did. This is just what he does over and over again. Right? Don't get in an argument with Jesus. He's going to win. He's going to make you look dumb, right? Having said all that, I want to spend the rest of our time on a couple takeaways, okay? Food for thought. I want you to know, first of all, how much we love you as pastors. We do not do what we do and teach what we teach and teach how we teach because we prefer it. We don't do it because it's easy. We don't do it because it's always agreeable. We have to answer to Dad when we get home for what we tell you out of this book. And that's a big deal. And I know I've said stuff in the past that's wrong, and I the more that I do that and I reflect on that, I wanna be more right. Not just for my sake, but for your sake. And so I want you to know that we don't fit into maybe a typical category or column as a church here, as far as our branding or what flavor we are. We are a Bible-believing church, meaning that we don't walk to our scriptures with a presupposition of what we want it to say. We walk to the Bible with a presupposition that it's going to correct us in our wrong understandings of him. We good? We love you guys. What I'm about to say might be a little challenging, especially in an election year, in a place called Lapine, with an overwhelming majority of conservatives and right-wingers, I being one of them. I'll just say it. All right. Well, don't clap yet. It's coming. See, the rest of the story is coming right now. Number one takeaway, pay your taxes. Pay your taxes. God says, give the man what is man's. I don't know how to argue with that. I can play with it. I can try to do gymnastics with it. I can hate it. I could try to find ways around it. But, like, God says, pay your taxes. That means that if I deem it unfit to do, and believe me, in the line of work that we are in, I would walk home each day with stacks of cash. Most people paid me in cash. Stacks. I mean, it was in the bag. It was in the bag. Yet we did not. Mostly my wife, due to her. She's good with that stuff. What this means when God says give to man what is man's, it means that if we deem it unfit or invalid to do so, we are in then direct disobedience to him. Okay? I don't want to live that way. Like, I want to sleep at night. I want to have a good relationship with God. I want to grow closer to him, not farther away. Right? No matter how many reasons we can come up with for justifying not paying our taxes, he said do it. And he says a lot more than that when it comes to authorities and governments over us. Let me read you this real quick. I'm sure you're familiar with it. As we're in an election year, we need to stay fresh with this stuff. We need to make sure that we're seeing clearly the things that God is wanting us to see clearly. Romans chapter 13, starting in verse 1, let every person... Now, hang on. Who's he talking to? Romans 13. The church, believers in the Roman church. All right. Let every person be subject to governing authorities. For there is no authority that exists except that which is from God. And those that exist have been instituted by God. You're like, not if it's democratic. Yes. Yes. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists God and what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. This is, in other words, serious stuff, not small stuff. This is big stuff. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do what is wrong, be afraid. Right? Because you'll be breaking the law at that point, and he'll be upholding it. Right? For he, the authority that God has put in place, does not bear the sword in vain. He is the servant of God. Doesn't say that he's godly. Just says he's the servant of God. An avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. This is some heavy stuff. Therefore, one must be in subjection not only to avoid the wrath of God, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes. For the authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing, pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes, to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. So many of us do not do what this says as Christians. And I'll tell you what, their government and their leadership at that time dwarfs ours when it comes to wickedness. Like, we have no excuse. And Paul is saying this to them. It's heavy. There's an old saying in the military, some of you might know, remember. We salute the rank, not the man. Salute the rank, not the man. This is kind of what's being talked about here. This is our very real challenge, isn't it, guys? A very real challenge. This was their challenge, right? This was their challenge to Jesus that day in paying taxes. They wanted a simple yes or no answer, but Jesus didn't give it to them. He didn't give them that, right? Jesus responds yes and yes. Yes and yes. Well, I worked hard for this money. This is what I say to myself. This is my justification immediately, every time, right? I mean, taxes just came back, and they weren't in our favor again, you know? I worked hard for that money. I did. They can't have it. It's not theirs. After all, they're corrupt. They're corrupt, and they're godless, and they mismanage it, and they spend it on things that are godless and that I disagree with. I earned that money. I have the right to spend it how I want. And then Jesus comes along and says, no, you didn't, and no, you don't. No, you didn't earn it, and no, you don't get to spend it however you want. God owns it. God gave it to me. It's his. And if it's his, he has the right to tell me what to do with it and how to spend it. That's just theology 101, right? If he tells us to give it to the governing authorities, right or wrong, left or right, liked or disliked, godly or godless, then that pretty much settles it, guys. That pretty much settles it. And again, as a small business owner, like, I feel everything in me wants to disagree. However, at the end of the day, fair or not fair, I want to be right before God, not wrong. I want to be right. And I want you to be right too. So if he says it, it doesn't leave it open for debate. That's just the way that it is. That's called giving to God what's God's. Okay? If you call yourself a Christian, a Christ follower, you and all that you have and own belongs to him. Every single bit of it. And so if he says give it to another, even if it means giving it to someone I despise, right, and is even working towards, someone who's working towards taking away my freedoms, then that still settles it. It settles it. In other words, if we believe that Jesus, not Caesar, is Lord, he gets to tell us what to do with our money, even if he says give it to Caesar. And it's right. And it's right. We good? Number two, it's just going to get worse. I love you guys. I really do. Do not allow your politics to trump, no pun, yep, little bit of a pun intended, your godliness. Do not allow your politics to trump your godliness. I would hope that there's some amens on this. Because this is another one that we are really bad at as the church, the right-wing evangelical sect of American politics. Horrible testimonies, guys. Horrible testimonies going out. In other words, stop making politics your religion. They are not the same. They are not the same. Stop making the temporal affairs of this world your primary fight. It is not your primary fight. Satan wants it to be. He wants to say, look over here, get angry, put all your time and effort and money over there when the fight's actually over here. Instead of being so diligent to give your allegiance to your political party of choice, be more concerned and diligent in giving your allegiance wholly, wholly to God. Wholly to God, who is the God of an altogether better kingdom. This is the part that we forget. We so much want to hold on to this kingdom that we grew up in and were born into, that we have fond memories of, the way it used to be in the good old days. And now it's so backwards and upside down and evil and corrupt, we just want to go back. But God, Jesus keeps saying, no, we're going forward. Like, I've gone to prepare a place for you that is altogether better than your best times in America. Devote and commit yourselves with the same fire and the same passion and the same fury that you have with politics to doing what is right before him. With your lives, regardless of what the political columns have laid out for you and expected you to fit into. This is where we need to wake up. Is political columns have been drawn, and you and I just seem fine to fit into them. Sheep aren't just Democrats. They are Republicans too. Because all a sheep does is follow the voice, whatever it tells them to do. You guys need to screw your brains on as Christians. Start being objective thinkers. Start being critical thinkers. When you do that, you will cross party lines in ways. And you will be free to do what God says is right, rather than what the GOP says is right. God is not a Republican or a Democrat. He's just truth, no matter where it lands. So we need to be willing, as biblical people, biblically thinking people, to call a ball a ball and a strike, no matter who's on the mound pitching. Are we good? Yeah. All right, it's going to get worse. Hang on. Give yourselves wholly to God, not a political party. Again, some of you are feeling this right now and probably disagreeing with me. And I also want you to know that we are so open to going out and having coffee or having lunch and lovingly having conversations about these things. We're so open to that. We welcome that. Give yourselves wholly to God and not a political party. I want you to hear this, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this is worth memorizing. Your biblical theology will inform your politics. There's no way around it. A biblical theology is a set of glasses, right? It's a windshield that we look through to view everything in life, whether it's parenting or finances or politics. Your theology will inform your politics. However, your politics, if you're not careful, can kill your theology. They can empty it of its value and its worth and its power, because all you are then at that point is purely politically driven and minded. It's too easy, when putting enough emphasis on this world only and this social issue only and this election coming up only, for us to jettison altogether our greatest message of a king and a coming kingdom that's better than this one. We need to continue to keep that right in front of us through our windshield. Better kingdom up ahead. Better king up ahead, right? Jesus has risen and ascended to the right hand of the Father to do what? He's gone, guys, to prepare a place. He's gone to prepare a place for us that's quantum beyond anything that we can imagine. That's quantum beyond this temporal thing that we're getting our fists bloody over to keep. As the citizens of an eternal kingdom, you know what? Never mind. Let's just stop. Number three, final one. People are going. Final one. Food for thought. Know that your God-given freedom cannot be taken from you. This is so important for us to understand. What God has given you in Christ cannot be taken from you. No matter who wins in November. No matter what this country looks like in 20 years. If you have Christ, you have everything. Amen. Nobody can take that from you. It doesn't matter how you're governed on earth. Real freedom is knowing this, that what we have in Christ cannot be taken from us. What he's given us cannot be taken away. What I mean by that is that real freedom is found in Jesus, not government. Jesus. So stop trying to find it there. Just stop. What's interesting is that we will all get behind that, and we will all cheer and say amen, right? And I think some of you do understand, but maybe not when I explain what I mean by it. Freedom, the word freedom, and protecting our freedom has become quite the buzzword for the Christian in America these days. The problem is that most Christians flying the freedom flag and don't take my freedoms aren't talking about the same kind of freedom the Bible's talking about. Most are talking about the kind that the Constitution is talking about. And they're calling that biblical freedom. American evangelicals are in large part promoting and fighting for a civil freedom. A freedom of civil rights is what that freedom is. The Bible is promoting and crying out for a spiritual one. A spiritual one. One that releases all men everywhere from the tyranny of sin and death and Satan. These two things are not the same. These two freedoms are not the same. Just ask the disciples. All whom died horrific deaths. And you know what? They were free when they did it. And they were freer when it was done. We can ask the Muslim today who converts to Christianity what they think about this, because they know. Their whole family turns on them. It ain't good. They die. We can ask the church in China, underground church, our brothers and sisters over there. One of the most disturbing and eye-opening realities I've seen of this that we're talking about in a long time, I saw on Super Bowl Sunday. Someone right now is like, don't bash football. Like, that's our sacred cow, right? Super Bowl Sunday, there was a church, a large one, like many large churches in America, that had a Super Bowl Sunday service, because that's the cool thing to do now, is to actually theme your service that day after the Super Bowl. So they had the big party style and everybody's dressed up. The pastor, they had a game. They staged a Super Bowl game on stage. And we're talking a church of like 10, 20,000 people. So it wasn't like five people watched this. You can go watch it. I'm not going to tell you the name of the church. But it's well filmed. And it's the most disgusting thing I've seen. Because when they go to start this game during church service, they teed up a Bible on stage. And the pastor's wife came and she punted the Bible off of stage into the crowd while all 10 to 20,000 of them cheered. At the same time, across the globe, in China, there's a dude with a cell phone in a dark basement filming a group of Chinese Christians who just received a cardboard box full of Bibles. And this dude's filming these guys pulling this box open and walking up one by one and grabbing a Bible out of there and holding it to their chests, weeping uncontrollably. This is the difference between the kind of freedom that you and I have been fighting for and call good and the kind of freedom that the Bible talks about. They are under communist rule. They had to sneak under the cover of darkness into that basement to get that Bible. But those people are free. They are more free than that church in America that punted their Bible off the stage. This is what we're talking about, and we need to understand the difference by what God means about freedom. I don't care what my life looks like going forward or how bad it might get. Christ is in me. And because of that, all else is taken care of. All else is taken care of. No matter how bad our government continues to get, no matter how much of my hard-earned cash they continue to take from me for taxes, I'm free. I don't need to go shout at somebody or yell at somebody over that. I should be praising God that I am free in all circumstances because of what it is that God has given me. And I want you to know this. I want you to know this so that we might be a more effective group of people for the gospel of the kingdom going out of this place. Because we don't see Democrat, Republican. We see lost and lost. And Jesus is their only hope. And so we love the people we're agreeable with, but we fight hard also for the people that are our enemies. Because that's what Jesus does. I was an enemy. You were an enemy. Now seated at his table. Made free from the bondage of Satan, sin, and death. I need to stop. We love you guys. And maybe I'm wrong. Some of you, no, I could be. I want you guys to search your scriptures and be honest with your scriptures and be honest with what God is saying in his scriptures rather than me. Lord, thank you for this text, which is so weird in so many ways. And I thank you for your response to those Pharisees and the Herodians. I pray that you would help us understand exactly what you mean by it. I pray that we would learn to love the bloodstained cross and the empty tomb more and more every day as we live, more than anything else on this earth. Or in this country, you. And so help us to be in the right fight. Help us to be about your business and not our own. We ask it in your name. Amen.